trying to keep Harrison from getting into the play. Just slant that way. See what Fran's going to come up with here.
1:55 left to play. Eagles 27, Vikings 21. First and goal from the 20th Philadelphia. Tarkenton, pump fakes, looks into the end zone, lets it rip. Touchdown Eagles. Ahmad Rashad goes up over two defenders. Touchdown Vikings. Vikings score the touchdown over Herman Edwards, and now the game is tied at 27.
What a great catch that was. He just went up and stole the football. Again, a double move. Again, throwing the ball, even though the people are covered, and watch this. They, both people were there. Shar was there, Edwards there. The Rashad comes down with the football.
Okay, so get down.
Okay, so let's start with this. What's the name?
Q-T.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to I Left My Wallet. I'm Antonio the Promise Thomas, also known as Thomas Santel, and I want to thank you for tuning in today to a man who most of you know and you know very well, and that is Nikita Koloff. And thank you for checking out this free show. I wanted to make it free because Nikita Koloff was a guy that, when I first started watching wrestling, was one of the most hated heels in the country. 1986 is when I started. And when he had the Best of Seven series with Magnum TA, as you'll hear in this conversation I had with him, I was heartbroken. I was shattered. And 2 weeks later, I think it was, Paul Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan, and 8-year-old me was devastated. I was like, why did I have to get into wrestling? Why did I have to start watching this only to have my heart broken? But you know, that was before Nikita came on to the good side of the side of Dusty Rhodes and the side of America. And this guy was such a pivotal figure in 1980s wrestling, mid-80s, late-80s, because it was at that time where you had Rocky IV, you had, you know, the Russians and the Soviet Union were the heels, the biggest heels at the time. You had Nikolai Volkov, you had Nikita was with Ivan Kolov and Crusher Khrushchev, and it was just a unique time for those that were alive, and Nikita Koloff was such a big part of it. And this is a guy that I wanted to talk to for a while, but now is the perfect time to talk to him because he's a very uplifting person. He's a very positive person, and I was scrolling through Twitter a few days ago, and he had some uplifting messages, and wanted to hear from his Twitter followers and his fans to send him some positive stories and some positive things. So I reached out to him, and here we are. We're talking, obviously, some sports. His background in high school of working out and playing football, and we're going to get into a little bit of wrestling. We get into a bit of everything. This is a free podcast. I wanted to make it free so that even non-subscribers, non-listeners could get a chance to check this out, because this is a very fun conversation that I'm very proud of, and I'm trying to put out an episode a day during this time to give everybody some positive audio and content to listen to. And this is one of those episodes. This is very positive, very uplifting, very fun. Here is my talk with Nikita Koloff. Enjoy.
absolutely agree. I mean, growing up, obviously, in the heartland of Minnesota, you know, Minneapolis, born and raised, move out to the suburbs in the fifth grade, and really somewhere in that between fifth, sixth grade, I really, really gravitated towards sports as an outlet for me. Grew up without a dad. My dad left when I was very young, maybe about 3 years old. And I remember picking up, I was at a store somewhere. I picked up a magazine called Iron Man Magazine. It was a bodybuilding magazine. I was just drawn to it and really kind of enamored by the pictures of the guys with all the muscles and stuff, because I was not a big kid by any stretch of the imagination. And it really just kind of fell in love with the idea. And at about the age of 12, made a statement to myself that it said these words: one day I'm going to look like one of those guys, like, quote unquote, literally what I said to myself. And I had got a paper route, became a paper delivery guy, boy, and used some of my hard-earned paper route money to buy a 110-pound plastic weight set from the old Sears and Roebuck. Started for the listeners out there who are old enough to remember that it being called that, and just started reading the articles and lifted a few weights in my, you know, my garage. I had a dirt floor garage, so real hardcore. Started reading about nutrition and eating and all of that. And then within about a year or so, started watching football on television, the NFL, and got a dream, got a vision for myself that one day I would play in the NFL. And in seventh grade, we had a park league. And met Coach Bill Burke, and he actually became my first male mentor, took me under his wings. And then a couple years later, met Jerry McFarland, who was a health teacher in the junior high school that I attended, but also a professional bodybuilder. So that fit right in with the whole vision, right?
And yeah.
So between those two guys, And Jerry took me under his wing, began teaching me everything about eating, nutrition, you know, working out, bodybuilding, and all of that. And that was the foundation, Tom, of my endeavor into sports.
So it's very, you know, a lot of similarities here. I didn't really, you know, my dad left home when I was a little older, when I was in middle school. But when he was around, a great guy, but when he was around and he drank, you know, he wasn't great. So I had some uncles to look up to, but my mom was my dad and my mom. So, you know, wrestling magazines, sports magazines, the plastics and sand weight set. It sounds like I'm hearing, you know, it's a mirror kind of image of my youth kind of. What, so, you know, you have these male mentors, as you get older, as you get into middle school and high school. Was it seventh grade that you started playing football, and then things just started, the body starts to come into place, the athleticism and the size, and you start to grow into your body? Tell me about your kind of your high school career athletically.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, interestingly enough, of course, we can talk more about this, but in high school, we had some great athletes in high school. And when everyone hears about all the guys that came out of my high school that eventually made it into professional wrestling.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because you hear about all the names from Minnesota. You hear Rick Rude. Joe Laurinaitis, Kurt Hennig, Barry Darsow,
right.
Wayne Bloom, all those guys. Who exactly was in your class? Who was above you? Who was below you? What is the timeline and relation to you and those other guys?
Well, a great question. And really, the interesting thing is when let me just say this, and then I'll share some of that with you, that when people hear what I'm about to tell you, they're like, wow, you must have had like an incredible football team. You must have had an amazing high school football career. And unfortunately, we did not. We were mediocre 500 football club because not only do you need great talent, but you really need great coaching as well. And we just did not have great coaching in high school. And that's what really kind of cost us from better seasons. But we did have a lot of great athletes. And so part B of the question then is at one time, names like you mentioned, Barry Darso, Kurt Henning, Rick Rude, myself, and another guy named John Nord.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And Nord the Berserker, Nord the Barbarian. All five of us, 1 year, we're on the same football team. 1 year.
Wow.
And Henning and Rude were a year ahead of us. They were a year ahead of us. John Nord and I, and then Darso Barry was a year behind us. So, you know, the five of us on the same football team. The two other guys though that came out of Robbinsdale High School that were a part of that same graduating class, that same group, was the Z-Man, Tom Zink.
Yeah.
Who went on to compete, of all things, in bodybuilding, Mr. Mm-hmm. Minnesota, and then lesser known Brady Boone. But
sure. Yeah. Oh,
but,
yeah.
Yeah. But Brady, so all seven of us were actually in school donning the halls of Robbinsdale at one point.
Wow, was the principal at his wit's end pulling his hair out or her hair out with all you guys there, knowing that, you know, with a couple from, you know, obviously with Kurt with a wrestling background at that point, but were you guys in study hall together or in classes together? How did that go?
I mean, but really the interesting thing is, like I said, Kurt and Rick and I, we all, you know, Barry, John, we all played football. So wrestling wasn't, I mean, some of the guys, like Kurt was on the high school wrestling team. Barry was on the high school hockey team in addition to football. I mean, talk about a brute. He was one of the, in those days, you know how they had what they called the goon on every team. Well,
sure.
That was Barry because he's 6'3", and then you put skates on him, and he's 6'6".
Yeah,
on the ice.
Yeah.
And then Rude was his dad was a Golden Gloves boxer, and wow. So we had a variety of backgrounds, and now that was just a nucleus of guys who went into wrestling. We had about 20-25 guys that were what you might consider just, you know, jocks, muscle heads. Jim Youngner, who Rick and Kurt and Tom and Brady, he eventually opened up a gym in Minneapolis. It was there for 25 years called The Gym. Hmm. And it became a mecca of the Midwest. And what I mean by that is not only did professional wrestlers come out of there, but world champion bodybuilders, power lifters. I mean, it was a magnet for athletes of every kind and weightlifters of every kind. Jesse Ventura worked out at the gym. I mean, there was so many marquee names in different levels that came out of The Gym. And it's bizarre to look back on. But yeah,
it's like the Venice Beach of the Midwest.
Of the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Venice Beach of the Midwest. And let me just add this too, real quick. So, really, high school, you know, we knew Kurt's dad was Larry the Axe Henning, but nobody entertained the idea or said, oh, I'm going to go into professional wrestling one day. I mean, you know, my dream was the NFL. I mean, Kurt and I actually played against each other in college football. Until injuries, we didn't even really entertain the idea of professional wrestling.
Where and what were your respective colleges and what positions did you play?
So I first entered into junior college. Actually, four of the five coaches had been former Robbinsdale High School coaches. And ironically, or interestingly enough, the defensive coordinator, I actually went to a Bible college. It was called Golden Valley Lutheran College. It was a Bible school. But Bill Burke, who was my grade as my first ever football coach, was the defensive coordinator at that school. He's the one who really kind of recruited me because, again, he's my first mentor. And, and I tell people I didn't go to learn about Jesus or to study the Bible. I went because that junior college team was the number one rated team in the nation for junior college football. And so that's why I went. And it's there that I played against Kurt Hennig. He was at what was called Normandale Community College. Rick actually, I think, played 1 year of college football. He might have played there. I don't remember for sure. And then Barry, I think for a while played a little college football. I'm not sure where either. But that said, I went on from Golden Valley up to northern Minnesota, and I played. I transferred up there and played Morehead State University.
Oh yeah,
I played both. Yeah, I played both tight end and defensive end in college. Kind of a rarity to play both sides of the ball, but I was a decent enough athlete to be able to do that.
How did you like playing both sides of the ball? Because you hear about guys like Chuck Benarek back in the day, and the first half of the 20th century guys playing two-way players, offensive and defense. And like you said, that's a rarity. What did that take an extra toll? It had to have taken an extra toll on your body, especially playing tight end. Getting hit over the middle and then having to come right back out and rush the passer.
Yeah, for sure. The 60-minute man, was a way, a thing of the past in a sense, at really kind of almost every level. But that said, I certainly loved playing offense more than defense, for sure. I love catching the ball. I love scoring touchdowns and, kind of getting that glory. But I also enjoyed blocking. It's interesting you brought that of all the names you can mention, Chuck Bednarik, grandson actually played at Morehead State University with me.
Wow.
I believe it was his grandson. Either way, I know his same last name, Bednarik. So there was a relationship there, a relation there. But definitely love playing offense much more than I did defense, although I enjoyed both sides of the ball.
And, growing up in Minnesota, you had to have had visions of joining Alan Page or Carl Eller on that defensive line, the Purple People Eaters, or catching touchdowns from Fran Tarkenton. What was the love of I don't know if you are I'm guessing you're a Vikings fan, but growing up in the 70s and whatnot, you had the Packers, you had the Steelers, you had the Cowboys. The Twins, I believe, went to the World Series in 65. They had Tony Oliva and Rod Carew. What was the love of sports growing up at that time?
Yeah, you have a love of sports.
I do.
You know a lot about Minnesota from being a Massachusetts guy. Yeah, that's impressive.
Thank you. I've been collecting baseball cards since I was three. So that's the impetus of this show, is to tie in wrestling with sports. Because sometimes when you're in that wrestling bubble and you're so focused, you're in the car rides and stuff and you're talking about matches and whatnot. And, you don't realize, oh my God, we're all sports fans here. A lot of us too. So what about, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say kudos to you for your sports prowess there. So 100%. still to this day, although I've lived now in the Carolinas longer than I even did in Minnesota, and you know, I am to a degree a Panther fan, but a loyal Minnesota Viking fan and Minnesota Twin fan. And I joke and say the Minnesota North Star hockey team had to go to Dallas in order to win a Stanley Cup. But that's okay. an avid sports fan. But yeah, the Purple People Eaters, man, the Steel Curtain of Pittsburgh, and certainly loved the Vikings back then. Still do now. And I, interestingly enough, ended up for a season of time in business with Fran Tarkenton, actually, back in the 90s. So that was fun to be able to share some of those stories. And of course, I've played in a lot of like Earl Morrill and Roman Gabriel and some of the legendary guys that got to hear some incredible stories. You mentioned the Packers. I had Jerry Kramer locked in my car for 2 days one time.
What?
At a tournament in South Carolina. Like, literally, he was a captured audience. I mean, I was his transportation. He had no other way to get around. And, man, the stories he told me about Vince Long and Bart Starr and some of it was just amazing to hear some of those stories. So, yeah, Bud Grant, Minnesota Viking coach, and just all that, man. The Twins.
He's still alive now, I think, Bud Grant, right?
He's still alive.
Yeah.
He did an interview hoping they'd be able to get to the Super Bowl last year. But, he's like 92 or 3 years old. I mean, amazing. You know, he's always kept himself active. And, of course, he was a big hunter back in the days. That was kind of a big deal. Hmm. You know, in the off season, where's Bud Grant? Oh, he's not here. He's off hunting deer, you know?
Yeah.
So
I remember couple of years ago, the wild card game against Seattle, he was out there. It was at Minnesota. And I remember him being out there in like frigid minus 10 degree weather for the pregame kickoff kind of coin toss. And
Probably without gloves and no hat.
Yeah, I think so. I think he just had like a shirt on or something. Like he embraced the
the elements.
The freezing temperatures. Yeah. What do you think about
Go ahead. I was just gonna say a little side note, some of your sports fans might find interesting is we had a changeover in coaching staff at Golden Valley my sophomore year, and they brought in this guy named Dave Skrine. You ever heard that name?
I think I've heard of a Buster Skrine before, but not a Dave.
Okay.
No.
I'm testing you. So Dave Skrine, who coached Joe Capp up in Canada, who Joe Capp became a Minnesota Viking quarterback.
Yep.
He also coached against Bud Grant and actually looked identical to Bud Grant with the flat top, you know, haircut. Well, Dave coached up in the Canadian League for a number of years, actually won the Grey Cup in 1963 as a coach, wrote a book called Countdown to Grey Cup. He became my head coach my sophomore year, and he ended up, he brought in Art Meadowcraft and George Adjic as assistant coaches who had played for the Vikings. And professional coaching staff my sophomore year in college. It was amazing.
Wow.
But yeah, Dave Skrine. So another little interesting bit of information there.
A lot of it's interesting how everything, there's so many people that, you know, not just in wrestling, but how they all kind of weave together. You know, you meet, you know, Chuck Benarek's son, this guy that coached, you know, Joe Capp up in the CFL. Very, very interesting. That's what I find fascinating, the relation, you know, between wrestling and sports. So, you know, I hate to say this, but I've been a 49ers fan. I don't hate to say that. I'm proud to be a 49ers fan, but they beat the Vikings this past year in the divisional game. And what's the sense that you get from the Vikings now as a fan? You know, you live in North Carolina, and I want to get into the Panthers just a little bit. But as far as the Vikings go, it seems like, you know, they just traded Stephon Diggs, and it seems like they're a good team. They're a solid team that's 10-6, 11-5, but they never get to that level where they're a legit Super Bowl threat. Where, like when they had Randall Cunningham and Moss in 98-99, they lost that game against the Falcons. They were a dominant force then. It doesn't seem that they've been that way for quite a while. What are your thoughts on the team now, and what do they need to do to kind of get over that hump, challenge the 49ers, challenge the Packers?
I mean, I think it you know, again, I had studied their coaching staff and all of that. They seem to have a solid staff in terms of coaches. And I think, like with any team, we would probably all agree. Now, you're up there in Massachusetts, so it's absolutely – interesting to me, because you're kind of in the hotbed of New England,
sure,
right?
Yep,
and
yep.
Some team, hold on, let me see, it'll come to me. Patriots. But so here's the evidence, right? The good head coach, quarterback for years and years and years, and it, to me, you know, that caliber, to get to that level that you're talking about, you know, you need a Tom Brady, you need a Peyton Manning, you know, you need that guy, an Aaron Rodgers. And again, nothing against Kirk Cousins. I mean, the guy, from every appearance, seems to be an incredibly great guy off the field and a competitor on the field. But it just sometimes seems to be an intangible among that leader in that position that takes a team or any team to that next level. And so whether it's the Vikings or anyone else, that's what, to me, leads to a very dominant team like the Patriots have been, or the 49ers with a Joe Montana.
Yeah.
Right. Back in the day, you know, and not that it just centers around one guy, because it doesn't, but, boy, that position seems to be pivotal to the success of a dominating, consistently dominating team. That would be my answer to that question.
Yeah, and you know, talking about the quarterback position, Minnesota had a guy, Teddy Bridgewater, very early in his career, known as a leader, doesn't have a rocket arm, but you know, took Minnesota to the playoffs, I believe, in his second year, maybe his first year, second year, got hurt. Now he's going to Carolina, which is right in your country.
My backyard.
Your backyard, right. Yeah. Cam Newton. It looks like they're going to release Cam Newton by the time this is going to come out later today. So I'm seeing reports that they tried to trade Cam Newton. Phenomenal, you know, talk about a leader, talk about a one-man team.
Great athlete
that, you know, as the injuries have taken a toll. But now, you know, you got Matt Rhule from Baylor now in Carolina. You got Teddy Bridgewater. You got maybe the most dynamic weapon in Christian McCaffrey. How do you – very disappointing season for – Carolina last year. You got to be optimistic that this year, now in the same division as Tom Brady, you got the Falcons in there. That NFC South is a fun division. Can you see Teddy Bridgewater being the guy to kind of get the Panthers back up as a contender in the NFC?
Hopes are interesting, because New Orleans part of that too, right? So
he was in New Orleans. Yeah, Breeze.
Yeah, he's coming over from New Orleans. So that whole division, that whole conference or division is going to be very, very competitive. So it will be interesting to see. And again, you know, one guy, that one position is important. Obviously, it takes a team, and it takes a good coaching staff, but there certainly seem to be bringing a guy in that can potentially get him up to the caliber of being you know, being a contender for reaching the Super Bowl. Now, I want to say, too, for the record, as much as we're talking about, you know, football on the professional level, having my college career, I've really become, 2, 3, 4 years, a college football fan, even more so, honestly, than the NFL.
Yeah.
Just the fun and the atmosphere of the college game and the competitiveness of the at the college level has drawn me over the last 2, 3, 4 years really to even watch probably way more college football than I even have the NFL, just for the record. So
yeah, my dad lives in Atlanta and right outside, and I mean, you know, SEC football, you're a little north of that, but you still have you know, my sister lives.
Oh, I'm an SEC guy though.
Yeah. You know, the best, I mean, it's the NFL light. I mean, it's, you know, God, I mean, you got LSU, Alabama, Florida. I mean, it's, you know, but even in the Carolinas, you got, you know, you've got Clemson, I was talking a couple months ago, I had Del Wilkes, the Patriot, on, and he was talking about South Carolina, where he went to school, getting that, you know, so many great, great programs, huge schools. It is. It's an event down there. It's you know, Sunday is church, and Sunday is, you know, a holy day, but Saturday is a holy day as well for football down there.
For many, you are 100% right, boy. If you ever go to, like, I went to actually a Gamecock game 2, 3 years ago, and I know Dell, but I went to actually speaking at a men's conference, and there we wrapped up on Saturday, and it was a Saturday night game. They're like, hey, we got 4 tickets for the Gamecocks. You want to go? I'm like, I'm in. So we went and. And it was a blast. I've been to, actually, Lex Luger and I have been to about 3 or 4 Alabama games, including one again in the Iron Bowl against Auburn. And and so I enjoy just the atmosphere and just a fun college football game, man. And I watched this past year, I watched probably about 5 or 6 teams.
Wow.
Closely.
Wow.
My Minnesota Gophers, dude. I was
shocked. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
I found out, I'm watching, I'm like, man, the Gophers are winning for once. And I find out they had their best season in 115 years. I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
They did. Wow. They. I remember, I think they had an ABC Saturday night game against Ohio State.
Yeah.
I think there was a, or maybe it was Penn State, but there was a huge, I believe they, I mean, obviously they play both and they're in the same conference. But yeah, they had some, I remember I was like, Minnesota, cause I'm a peripheral kind of a college football fan. You know, since I got it, I used to watch college football, college basketball all the time. Then when I graduated college and got into wrestling, my weekends were, you know, were filled with wrestling. So
right,
something,
right.
You know, base, you know, MLB, NFL, NBA, that took up all my time. But, you know, I follow it from, you know, as a casual fan, but yeah, Minnesota, it was 115 years. Wow.
115 years. And it's funny because, like, you mentioned Ohio State, because they were, you know, came down to the last game of the season against Wisconsin, which Wisconsin, you know, drilled them. I actually got to watch 3 or 4 of the Gopher games this year because of, you know, the networks, because of how good they were doing. And they missed the Rose Bowl by 1 game, which is, hey, it's what it is. But they beat a SEC team in the bowl game. They did all right this year, this past year.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at finishing the top 25. I'm trying to look at it, see where they finished in the rankings. But
I think it was like, yeah, because they were in the top 10 going into that Wisconsin game, and depending on the results, they might have been able to pull some other things. But just the fact that they won, you know, against an SEC team like Auburn when nobody thought, oh, they don't.
Yeah, 11 and 2 beat Auburn in the Outback Bowl. Yep, and they finished 10th in the.
So in the top 10. There you go.
Not bad.
And
not
I like
bad.
Their coach. They got a guy. I didn't know much about their coach, but I like their coach. They got a good coach.
Yeah, I'm looking here. I don't. You know, I like to go off the top of my head and have it be natural, but I remember their coach, I believe, was being talked about as a possible head coaching candidate in the NFL with Matt Rhule, with Lincoln Riley. So I believe Iowa, too, Iowa's coach as well. I can't think of his name now. But yeah, a lot of people are much bigger fans of college football than the NFL. And, you know, having been to both games live, I can definitely – the college football is more fun live. I wanted to get – as we start to wrap things up here, there are a couple things that I definitely wanted to get to. I wanted to get to the sports, but certainly have a couple wrestling things. But we mentioned in our emails that you were going to school, or when you were in college, you were going to be a teacher, which is what I do. Is that correct?
Yeah. You do PE, right? And
yeah,
health.
PE and health. Yep.
Very cool. That was my, I mean, I got a degree in PE and physical education. I minored in coaching and health. And because wrestling wasn't on my radar. My dream was the NFL. And I, at age 12, kind of charted out my whole course, I felt like it, which, by the way, little side note, remember that statement I said I made at age 12? One day I'm going to look like one of those guys.
Yeah. You know?
Fast forward 12 years, the day I walked into Jim Crockett's office, wrestling office in Charlotte, North Carolina, what he saw was a guy that was 285 pounds, 8% body fat with a 34-inch waist. So exactly what I said I would become 12 years earlier,
yeah,
I had become. And that's what he saw that day I walked in. So.
And you went right – you trained with Eddie Sharkey, correct?
I did not. Everybody asked me that question.
Okay.
And I think one of two things. Either Eddie's telling everybody that, which – they assume because he trained many other guys, and because I'm friends with guys, you met Blue and others, that they were assumed. Story, Tom, people go to NikitaKoloff.com. You'll read the whole story because we don't have time today to talk about it.
Sure.
But the short version of that is, I walked into Jim Crockett's office only having a 5-minute conversation sight unseen on the phone with him 2 months prior, no pictures, just a phone call, and made sure he understood, Mr. Crockett, you understand I have no amateur wrestling background, no professional training. I've never stepped into a ring or hit a rope. And he said, I understand that. Be in my office with your head shaved bald on this day in June. I said, yes, sir, I'll see you then.
Wow.
Walked into his office that day, took a look at me, introduced me to Ivan Koloff, Don Cornota, World Tag Team Champions, put me right in the interview set, and then said, be in Raleigh, North Carolina tomorrow night, Dorton Arena, you're going to wrestle on television, having never been in a ring before.
So you're literally learning on the job, like you'd hear, you know, you hear guys like Bobby Eaton or guys down in Memphis that would – you know, have a veteran say, hey, kid, this is how you take a slam. Just post on my hip or my, you know, here. And you're literally learning on the job in front of the whole world and in front of the whole Mid-Atlantic area in a time where they're pretty much at the height of their popularity or about to enter into it. In the mid 80s.
Enter into it, Tom. Yeah. It was a timing thing, right? And so they were looking for a new infusion, some new talent to enter into that, the heyday of the golden era. And it was fire by trial, as the old expression goes, because I was just thrown into the fire, into the ring. 2 minutes of 5 minutes of experience in the dressing room on even how to tie up and,
right.
you know, and then for the next 2-3 months, it was Ivan and Don, the three of us getting to the town 2-3 hours early. And they teach me the mechanics of wrestling before the night. And then I'd have a short match. They'd have a world tag team match. They'd sit, Ivan would sit in my corner. I'd sit in his corner.
Mm-hmm. And that's,
we would then talk about we'd talk about the psychology of wrestling. So mechanics before the match,
yep.
psychology after the match.
In the car ride.
That's
yep.
how I quickly learned.
Yep. Those car rides. Yeah. Applying
yep.
it. Yeah. You know, that's the, apprenticeships don't get any bigger and more up close and legit than that. So,
yep, that's it.
I started watching wrestling at the end of 85 and I remember I was just from that point on, I was immersed and just
sure.
grabbed every magazine I could, went to the library, got all the books. And I was heartbroken in July of 1986. I was 8 years old and it was the best of seven series. And I remember watching it on Saturday morning. They played highlights of you versus Magnum TA. It was the seventh.
Yeah.
It was at the Great American Bash. I believe it was outside in the stadium. And when I thought there was, being 8 years old, you know, this is the time of you know, Rocky beating the Russian and the A-Team and all this G.I. Joe, all this stuff that was immersed in my life. I'm like, there's no way the evil Russian is going to win. And you won. And that ruined, I was heartbroken for like a week. And then like a couple weeks later, Paul Orndorff turned on Hulk Hogan. And I was like, why do I watch this? It's breaking my heart. I'm like,
right, right.
you know?
Right.
But I want to ask you one thing. I believe in 1992 or 91, you came back to WCW. But then after that, that was it. You never came back to wrestling. And I wanted to ask you, was there any time in the 90s when Nitro was hot, when the Attitude Era, WWF was, Stone Cold was getting hot and it was becoming mainstream. Was there any time during that, you know, second part of the 90s where you had an urge to come back or where people reached out to you and said, hey, there's a lot of money to be made. Would you be interested in coming back?
It's a great question. Because I give you just a little quick backstory, a little bit more backstory. Because, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I always, in my mind, always wondered why athletes, you know, couldn't walk away, you know, as a champion. You know, in other words, they'd stay so long, they, you know, in a sense, you're like, look, you're past your prime. Go ahead. Just stop.
Yeah.
You know, don't. You know, you mentioned 49ers. I was like, when Joe went from there to, I get it. You're an athlete. You want to compete. When he went from there to Kansas City, I'm like, Joe, you just don't look the same in a chief uniform.
You don't want to be 49ers. You don't want to be Joe Namath with the Rams. You know.
Well, just say, you know, Tom's not going to look the same in a Buccaneer uniform.
Right.
Okay, I get it. I get it. But I made a decision personally. I said, man, when I make it, I will walk away as a champion. I will walk away with my health on top. And for that reason, I've been kind of coined, Tom, the Barry Sanders of pro wrestling. Okay.
Yep.
Cause I, you know, I'm 33 when I made the decision to walk away. But when I broke in, I told the guys, I will leave this business by the time I'm 35 from active wrestling in the ring. And walk away. And they're like, well, I did. Under my own terms, I walked away. So in answering your question, when I walked away, I mean, I unplugged. And by that meaning, I didn't even follow what was going on. I didn't watch wrestling on TV. I didn't for there was a 3-year period there, I didn't even communicate with any of the guys. It wasn't until that was from 92 to December 1995. I didn't see any of the guys or talk with any of the guys for 3 years. And so to answer, I was happy, you know, excited for the guys and what they were doing. But A, I never entertained the idea of going back because I, you know, had made up my mind to walk away and leave as a champion for the success the guys were having, the explosion of the NWO and all the guys flipping back and forth, Hogan and Savage and all the guys. And they also never reached out to me to see if I wanted to come back. So I think they knew I was pretty serious in my decision that I had bronzed the boots, so to speak, and sure. Tucked the chains away in the attic. And and Tom, I've never looked back. I mean, you know, as you know, or many people know, I had a, you know, in November of 1993, in October 1993, I had a life-changing experience at an altar in a church, and life's just never been the same since. And so I'm still thrilled to be a part in terms of Legends autograph signings and communicate with all the fans and getting out there and mixing it up. But that's the extent of it. So,
yeah. And you mentioned that life changing moment in 1993, you're doing some fantastic work with your ministry. And for the past, you know, since 1993, you have, pretty much devoted your life to helping others and you know, preaching the word of God. And that got me, you know, seeing your Twitter during this negative, you know, this time we're going through, this crisis unlike anything we've kind of seen in our lifetimes, you're putting out videos on Twitter about positive stories and positive things. You want the emails, you want to hear good things. Talk about your ministry and, you know, just the positivity that you want to bring to people's lives, to people in your ministry, and just anyone that you come in contact with and that you can touch.
And I appreciate that. And you know, I like to, in one sense, call myself the eternal optimist, right? And no matter how black a cloud you bring to me, I'm going to do my best to find a silver lining somewhere.
Yeah, glass half full.
The glass is full and overflowing.
Even better,
It's not even half full or half empty. It's hey, let me help you fill your glass until it overflowing. So I'm going to do my best to speak something positive into your life, if at all possible. Hence my Twitter, Instagram feeds, and the videos and everything else. And so I've been fortunate from that day, you know, 17 October 1993, when I was at that altar and gave my life to Jesus. That, like I said, when I say it's never been the same, my perspective, my view of life, everything changed that day. And so I want to bring as much encouragement to people's lives as I possibly can. And you know, I've been fortunate now to have traveled to all 50 states and so far 30 different countries. And I have in my sights over the next 5 years, a minimum of another 20 countries to travel to.
Wow.
And, yeah, and we do a lot of, in fact, I've teamed up, like Lex Luger and I do a lot of ministry together. In fact, we did a camp last year in North Carolina called Man Camp. And, you know, he and I take our experience of health and wellness and what it took to become a champion, so the right mentality, and our spiritual journeys that he had an encounter in April 23rd, 2006. And I've been mentoring and discipling him over all these years. And in fact, had him live with me for 10 months in 2015. Wow. And so we just want to give back. We want to give back and try to, not just men. I mean, certainly men is a focus for myself, for him and I, but just people in general. I just want to try to infuse some positivity, again, especially in these trying times, into people's lives, and let them know there is hope, there is the future, and I'll do my best or my part hopefully infuse that into other people.
Beautiful. Where, you know, being a PE and a health teacher and, training, with so many people of all different ages, coaching and being a trainer, it's refreshing to hear that other people that want to give back and help others, especially now, because we need it more than ever. So where can listeners find you and the positive stuff that made me reach out to you on Twitter, on Instagram, and your website?
Well, I appreciate it. Well, so Twitter, Instagram, just the name Nikita Koloff with the number one behind it. That's the real me. Nikita Koloff, the number one behind it. I mentioned one website, NikitaKoloff.com. And if guys are out there and want to learn more about Man Camp, just go to mancamp.info, mancamp.info, I-N-F-O. And you can learn more about Man Camp and perhaps come and spend just a few days and hang out together. And we just talk about life and just real talk. And, those are kind of the outlets. This is real quick as well. I'm in the process of, I've written three books. I'm in the process of writing a fourth book, and actually revising and updating the last one, which was my biography, Nikita, A Tale of the Ring and Redemption. And so I got a lot of some new writing in the works, and people can keep their eyes open for that too. They'll be available on Amazon and other places in the future. And of course, I'll keep people abreast of all that on social media as well. So, and I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today, Tom. Thank you.
He's been that way ever since.
If he's such a great world champion, why doesn't he sign contract against Steve Dieter? What do we have to do to get
contracts? He has other
matches. Well, let me say this, David Crockett. Well, Ric Flair is such a great man.
Why is he taking everybody? He is the world heavyweight champion, that's why.
Would you quit interrupting me? Why does he keep avoiding us all
the
time?
He's not avoiding you. He has contracts to fill. He's the world heavyweight champion. Just because this guy says that he's going to be world heavyweight champion doesn't mean he is the world heavyweight. It doesn't mean that he's the number one challenger.
You go out and you say, well, we don't deserve to be in this country. Well, we have proven ourselves. We are. Nikita is
from behind.
Are you calling me coward?
Oh my goodness! Somebody check out David Crockett. Oh no! Well, now we're going to look back at the ring. Nikita Koloff is just—he just knocked David Crockett right off his feet.